This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasin. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasin.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening around the world on KBC.com. On this beautiful Memorial Day weekend, I am Alan Gervie, and I am still, believe it or not, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here during this beautiful weekend to be the managing partner of your life, and I am here with the beautiful and incomparable Kerry Kasin.
Well, thank you, Alan.
Kerry, it is so great to see you.
Good to see you, too.
And, you know, it is Memorial Day weekend. And what do we do on Memorial Day weekend?
Well, I know most people, like, have the barbecues and party.
No, we remember.
That's right.
You have to think about where we have been and where we are now. Memories. And in the second half hour of our show, we are going to speak to David Gran, who is a best-selling author, works for The New Yorker, and he wrote a book called Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders, and The Birth of the FBI. It's a fascinating read. We're going to talk to David about that and see, maybe they will turn it into a movie. I think it should be.
I mean, they turned his last book into a movie, The Lost City of Z, which
right.
I saw.
Yeah,
and I have questions.
You do have questions.
I have questions.
So what do we also think about when we go back into our memory bank? I think about the movies that I loved back in the day, like Pretty in Pink, mm-hmm. The Breakfast Club,
right.
One of my favorites. And then, of course, there are so many other movies like Edward Scissorhands, 6 Degrees of Separation.
Yeah.
And why am I saying all this? Because
you missed Weird Science.
Of course. I could never miss Weird Science. That was another John Hughes amazing film. And we are privileged to welcome to Gervie's Law because there is a new movie that just debuted last night with Netflix called War Machine. And this gentleman is VH1's number 4 of a list of 100 greatest teen stars in the history of the world. Anthony Michael Hall, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you both.
Have you ever had an introduction like that?
No, that was amazing, and it was very insightful. I was enjoying the show there.
Well, now you got to talk. You can't just listen. And first
right.
of all, we want to talk about War Machine because it is an incredible film. It just debuted last night on Netflix, and this is a movie who you co-star with Brad Pitt. And it's about Afghanistan, of all topics. A lot of people think that's a very controversial topic because in the film it says, we're not here to win, but we're here to clean up a mess. Is that a policy that you think, after doing this movie, was something worthwhile from our government and from this country?
It's a very interesting and very pointed question. I mean, to be honest, my goal here is just to speak to the quality of this film. I mean, it's really been the greatest honor of my career to be a part of this movie. And thanks to Brad Pitt and Plan B and Netflix, we got a great opportunity to make a really interesting film here. And so I just feel very privileged to be a part of it. And I'm really glad that, people will see this film. And it debuted last night, as you said.
You know, the film is a little bit satirical. And there's a balance between the comedy and, of course, the seriousness, because the topic is serious. When we talk right. about the models who were behind the characters, General Stanley McChrystal, when we talk about perhaps your character loosely based on Michael Flynn, was that something that you had done research on, or was it a script that you were just given and you took it and ran with it?
Great question. Well, the truth is the answer is both. I when I met with Mr. Michaud, I had a really nice conversation with him. And then I read the book. And then I had the good fortune of meeting with Dee Dee Gardner and Francine Maisler. And, you know, thank God I got to be a part of this film. What I did was once I got on location and even before I flew to London to start the picture, I I did do a lot of research on General Flynn and General McChrystal, and I read General Flynn's book, Field of Flight, and I gave a copy of General McChrystal's book to Brad, or Mr. Pitt, I should say. And so research is very key, you know, and I think that with this we have a very unique opportunity. You know, despite anyone's politics, it's really about acknowledging that this is a pro-soldier film, and this is a film that's destined for our ages, you know, this current time that we're living in.
And so
it was an incredible experience. Yeah, it really is, you know, and much smarter people than I, you know, at Netflix and Plan B had the intelligence and the insight to time this perfectly. As you said, and we should all be aware, this is an incredible release time for this because, again, as we approach this Memorial Day weekend, it's a time to remember, as you both said, and to reflect and to appreciate the great liberties that we have as Americans. So this is a really interesting and powerful film, and it draws from the true story. But the intention, I think, was for it to be inspired by this book. But, you know, really my goal throughout the process was to really bring honor to, you know, the military. My grandfather was in World War II. I had an uncle in Korean War and also an uncle in Vietnam. So for me, all the inspiration I needed was knowing, you know, where I was and where I fit in with this situation in terms of this film. And again, we really wanted to honor the soldiers.
I have a question. You know, you talked about it being released, and I know you grew up in an era where movies were on the big screen and, you know, TV was TV. Now it's just this mixed medium of everything on everywhere. What does it feel like to have a movie come out on Netflix?
Well, it's incredible. I mean, I think what Mr. Serranos has done is really revolutionary in a way. And I think in any sector of life or business, when people have to face change, it's sometimes difficult. But, you know, what's incredible about this company is they have incredible resources. But more importantly, they've got great taste, and they have the intelligence to assign great people with, you know, wonderful opportunities. So here again, we have this, you know, this is the biggest movie of my career, you know, and I'm so honored just to be a part of it. To work,
you were in The Dark Knight. Hold on, you were in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Oh, well, how can you say that?
Yeah, you
how can you say that? You've been in, like, I mean, some of the biggest movies that, I mean, will last forever and ever through all the generations, and stuff that I've seen that I will never forget, that I show my nieces.
Yeah, come on.
This is a big film, but my God.
And you almost kissed Will Smith in Six Degrees of Separation. How can you say that this is a bigger moment?
I mean, The Breakfast Club. What?
That was...
What are you talking
Thank
about?
Thank you. I appreciate that from both of you. But, you know, I was never more keyed up and excited about a project. You know, as an actor, you go where the work is. And I'm just grateful and filled with a genuine sense of pride because I had such an incredible experience, thanks to Plan B and Netflix, to be a small part of this film.
Now, Brad Pitt
said... So the experience was great.
Brad Pitt said that he didn't know if this film would have been made but for Netflix. How does that all work, and were you involved when the evolution of the distribution deal was taking place?
No, I mean, that's above my pay grade. I just was happy to be a part of it as an actor. I'm grateful to be on set. And the experience of itself, again, thanks to everybody, you know, mentioned, was incredible. I mean, we were fortunate enough to go to London, and we met. All of us met there, and we worked on the movie for about 5 weeks, and then we transitioned and went to the Middle East and shot in the UAE and Abu Dhabi and Dubai and other places, and just an incredible experience. And we have a brilliant and really talented writer-director, David Michaud, who made the film. And you know, film fans remember he did Animal Kingdom and The Rover, so just a great group of people.
Yeah, a lot of talent there. And Topher Grace said that shooting in Abu Dhabi wasn't wonderful, but it was better than shooting in Afghanistan. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know what? I think he's got a good point there. You know, I was really fascinated by the culture, and I really appreciated it. And, you know, when you travel, it's important to open your eyes and your ears and your heart. And I was just, I really embraced the whole experience. Lucia and I had an incredible time, thanks to Plan B and Netflix. But really, back to the film, I mean, it was really about the work. And, you know, this is a film for our times. This is something that, despite your political opinions and views and where you stand as Americans, I think it's really important to acknowledge this is a really interesting film because it goes from satirical and it has commentary, certainly. And at the same time, it transitions and evolves into a more classic, you know, war picture. So that's my personal take on it. And it was just an incredible experience. You know, we were gone overseas for 3 or 4 months. We finished the film in Berlin. And, you know, honestly, it was just the highlight of my career, you know, to work alongside Mr. Pitt and to be a part of this. And I'm proud to say the film turned out amazing. I mean, it really is a beautiful piece of work, and I'm proud of everybody involved because it takes, you know, just like in the military, it takes a team. It always takes the group.
So what should someone take away from the film? I don't want you to give it away because there's a lot of twists and turns. It's not as straightforward as people would think, but it is a complex subject. What, as an actor playing with Brad Pitt and a lot of other fine people, what did you take away from the film, and what do you think people should be excited about seeing?
Well, interesting. Yeah, it's a great question. And there are a lot of themes there, but I think that everyone will take something different from the film. I mean, I just think it's a great piece of work. And, you know, to have partners like Netflix, just amazing. Because, again, they have the intelligence and great taste of any major studio. And at the same time, they give everybody a lot of space to do their work. So, again, Plan B is one of the finest companies in the industry. You know, they've produced Oscar-winning films, as you all know, from, you know, 12 Years a Slave to Selma and others.
Yeah, amazing movies.
Really, just a top-notch company, and they're really at the top of the industry. So Mr. Pitt, Ms. Gardner, Mr. Kleiner, everybody, I mean, just did great work. And again, like they say, it takes a village to make a, you know, to raise a child. It takes more than that to make a film. It's a collaboration of over 100 people, probably.
And of course, you were cast by Francie. Francie's an old friend of mine when I worked at NBC with Jeff Meschel and her. We're very close, another casting director. How did you get the gig? Because, you know, a lot of people still think of you, you know, they don't realize you've had this prolific career after the classic Brat Pack movies. But how did you get into the place where you were, you know, playing Michael Flynn, kind of?
Right.
Kind of.
Well, you said it. I mean, I believe it started with, you know, Plan B and also Francie Maisler. I mean, I tip my hat. I was so grateful and excited to, you know, be brought in for the film and to have an opportunity to discuss it with Dave Michaud. And what it did, what happened is it led to meetings with Francine and Dee Dee. And, you know, I was just really thrilled, you know, they were kind enough to welcome me into the team.
Is this the same Francine that's the one that she's a casting director that smokes like a chimney? I'm not sure if that's the one that's been around forever and ever and ever. But, yeah, that's, you know, I have a question for you. And, like, you're looking at me going, no.
What does that have to do with anything?
She's been around forever. And
well,
she cast a friend of mine in a movie, but if that's the same one. You know, I have to say, I have traveled the Middle East, I don't want to say extensively, but a lot. You know, I've been to Lebanon and Jordan and Syria and Dubai. And I there were so many surprising aspects of the Middle East that you never hear about here, back here in America. Did anything surprise you about being out there?
Many things surprised me, but I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was, again, bringing to light the incredible work and the selfless work and all the dedication that our American men and women who are in the military offer us and provide for us, you know, both safety and you know, they keep America alive, you know. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that. And, again, I was just really honored. So I wanted to, you know, honor the memory of not just my grandfather and my uncles who have served this country, but all of the armed forces because you know, freedom is not free, and the men and women of the military protect us so we can enjoy the liberties that we do. That was like sort of my one thought that I kept as I was doing the work.
What an amazing message on this Memorial Day weekend, because a lot of people lose sight of what it really stands for. This movie is what it stands for, and what Anthony is saying right now, that's what it stands for. We have to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Anthony Michael Hall right here on Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure,
cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Hey, Leanne Tweeden here. The days are getting longer, warmer, and summer's pretty much here. It's that time when everyone and everything goes crazy. And that's what happened to my sewer line. 3 hours before a dinner party, it clogged and water backed up into the sinks. Fortunately, I knew who to call. SoCal Plumbers 911, the referral service for the very best plumbers. And here's how to get in touch. Go to SoCalPlumbers911.com or call 877-PLUMBER. They're offering $50 off your entire bill just to try them out. For any plumbing problem, remember SoCalPlumbers911.com or 877-PLUMBER.
Join 790 KABC and 95.5 KLOS at the Pet Adoption Day, Saturday, June 10th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the SPCALA in Long Beach. And adopt a new friend for life. There will be tons of adorable puppies, kittens, and cats, as well as dogs that are looking for new homes. We're talking hundreds of animals ready for you to love. Brought to you by the all-new 2017 Subaru Impreza. It's more than a car. It's a Subaru. For more information, go to kabc.com/pet.
Celebrating 50 years of Kings hockey.
Go Kings, go! Go Kings, go!
7979 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervey's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Unlimited data from AT&T means you could stream it all. Like that Anthony Michael Hall movie where he fights with the girl. And then there's the one where he gets totally rejected by the girl. Even stream the one where he literally creates the girl. So with unlimited data, you can stream all the Anthony Michael Hall movies you want. I wonder what he's up to these days.
Well, maybe he's shopping at an AT&T store.
Get unlimited data when you have AT&T Wireless and DirecTV. Plus, get up to $650 in credits.
Wow. What a great commercial. I love that commercial. AT&T, that was Lily. And for those of you who didn't see it because it's radio, she's actually talking to Anthony Michael Hall when she says, I wonder what he's up to these days. And that's Milana Weintraub. She has been right here sitting next to me on Gervey's Law. We had a whole show with Milana for her The Can't Do Nothing movement, which is her support of the rights of refugees, especially in Syria. Anthony Michael Hall, tell us what it was like doing that commercial. It is hilarious when she looks at you and says, I wonder what he's up to these days.
Right. Well, I'm really glad you mentioned some of her background to give it context. What an interesting and very, very bright young lady.
Yeah.
Considering her story, because she was, in fact, a refugee, as you well know.
Right.
That was a lot of fun. That was a real gift. I didn't, you know, anticipate that in any way, and I got a call from my manager at the time, Jonathan Branstein. He was a great guy, and that was a real gift. You know, I just showed up, and we had a lot of fun that day.
You know,
nice lady.
It's funny because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have come up to you, called you the classic nerd and the geek in a nice, lovable way. There's different ways to look at Anthony Michael Hall from, of course, the classic movies of the past. But that commercial actually was pretty funny and pretty dead on. Sometimes you see these commercials and they say, oh, man, I have to say these words. But it was so natural. Didn't you feel that way?
I really did, Alan, and thank you for that. You know, what was really nice about that, there was a lot of flexibility, and there was a great crew on the set. And so fortunately, we wound up kind of ad-libbing a lot of stuff. And that kind of evolved from, you know, the staff at the ad agency that was on set, you know, as they will be. And great experience. It was really nice. And then I learned more about Milana, and she was a really interesting lady. So it was a really real nice opportunity and a real blessing.
For those of you who want to know more about Milana, if you go to the KBC.com page, Gervey's Law Podcast, it was about 4 or 5 months ago that we had Milana here, and she really opened up, and what Anthony is saying is really true. She has a very interesting background. She's very engaging, and if you want to listen to that show, go and listen to the podcast. Carrie, you were going to ask Anthony something.
Yes, I know War Machine's coming out, and I just wanted to know what's next for you.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very happy to say I've been developing a television series with Susan and Robert Downey, and Robert's an old friend of mine. And that show is called Singularity. We've been working on the script for the television series for over a year. So I'm really happy and honored that my old friend has been so kind to help me and to work on this project with me. And they're just a great family. So that's been in the works.
And aren't you his child's godfather?
I am, yeah. Indio, his son, is my godson.
Yeah. That's amazing. So you guys, this must be a labor of love. When can we look for something to come out on Singularity?
Thank you. Well, I defer there to Team Downey because they're putting it all together. But I'm just really excited to be a part of it. And it's a real fun show. It's about it's a comedy about a family, and we're looking to set it up as a television show. So that was another honor that my old friend who's on top of the world, who has certainly exemplified the greatest comeback in Hollywood history, is so kind to help me out and to work on this project with me. And his wife is an amazing producer. I mean, she's just top-notch, Susan. So
they're
great friends. And we've been developing that, and we're going to set it up, I think, next year. Hopefully, we're going
to... Okay. Well, when it's ready to go, you come right here on Gervie's Law, and we will have you present it to the listening audience, because I'm looking... Robert Downey Jr. is one of my favorites.
Yes.
In fact, people say I kind of look like him.
Right,
so.
Just like him. Like
there
twins.
Just
like twins.
Stop
I
that.
Love that guy. Now, I've never interviewed him, but he comes off as such a genuine, kind man. Like
really?
You do. Like you do.
Oh, come on, Anthony. You're here to say that he isn't. Right?
No, he's a great guy. He really is. And his wife is too. And so it's a great experience just developing the script and getting that ready. So we're looking forward to that.
Was it kind of
the privilege of work?
Go ahead.
No, the show is called Singularity,
yeah,
right? So
yeah.
They're working on the deal points and kind of setting the show up right now. And the other project I did last year, I had the pleasure of working with Bruce Dern on a film called Lears. It was directed by a man named Carl Bassai, who was a very talented Canadian writer-director. So some great projects. I just feel really fortunate to still be doing what I'm doing and working with such great people because it's always been a dream. You know, you always want to be in great company. And I've been very blessed and fortunate to work with some great people, especially in recent years. And War Machine is at the top of that list. I mean, I've never been more excited about a film. I'm just really happy. It's such a great film.
And, you know, there's so many interesting parts of War Machine that are actually comical but in a serious way. Did it remind you at all at some of the shtick that you did back when you were on Saturday Night Live in 85 and 86?
Well, that was a great experience, too. You know, the interesting thing about the film, and then I told David Michaud this last week at our really great screening we had in New York, he really pulled it off. I mean, to really kind of balance that that sort of satirical, you know, inspired by the great, you know, Kubrick and Strangelove, that kind of take on the War Machine itself. But then the film transitions, and it becomes really a classic kind of war film. It's incredible what he did. So it's a testament to all the efforts, Dee Dee Gardner, Jeremy Kleiner, Mr. Pitt, and everybody involved. And, of course, the great support of Netflix. I mean, they're really a great company. They have great taste, and they're such good people. And they give people space to make the stuff that they can do.
Importantly, it's a great business model because there's so many people who will be able to see War Machine that may not have been able to through the theatrical, the normal, what we're expecting theatrical release. Isn't that the case?
It really is. That's a great point, Alan. And the truth is, you know, I think change affects people differently, you know. And at the same time, it's an incredible model. We have to remember it's a new century, right? So what Mr. Sarandos and Mr. Hastings are doing is phenomenal because they are creating original content across the board, original films, television, and giving so many people like me opportunities.
Now
so it's a real privilege. It really is.
Anthony, now you say that Mr. Pitt really appreciated, you really appreciate Mr. Pitt. He really appreciated you. He gave you an engraved watch, which you didn't even know was engraved.
Wow, Alan, you caught that story. That's incredible. Yeah, no, at the end of the film, we had an amazing party at this place in Berlin that Plan B and Netflix set up. And, you know, I offered some gifts just of appreciation to Brad and to Dee Dee and to Jeremy and to David. And what turned out was incredible. The next day, there was a knock at the door. And, you know, he delivered a really beautiful watch. And I'm such a knucklehead. I didn't even turn the watch over for a few months and notice the engraving. But it was an incredible gift. And it said, you know, AMH War Machine and 4 stars. And that was the greatest compliment for me that, you know, I just kind of kept my mouth shut and focused on the work. And I'm a bit of a method actor at times when I feel like the work requires that. So it was such an honor that Brad felt that way about my work. And, you know, it was just the greatest honor of my career to work alongside him. It really was.
And that's saying a lot because, of course, you worked with John Hughes on a number of films, 3 or 4 films, and that was an incredible talent.
Thank you. You know, know, that old saying, Alan, we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. I'm not sure who wrote it back in, you know, originally, but yeah. It's so true. The idea of being mentored and learning that we all work together in teams and that we all need a break, and people really do care and help. And I've had the privilege from John Hughes to Steve Allen to Harold Ramis. I mean, there's so many great people that I've been so fortunate to learn from and work with. And this is at the top of the list. I mean, certainly because I'm so, you know, really happy with how the film turned out.
Were there any, and this is just a kind of more of a personal question, but were there any movies that you, there was a set that you just stayed super close with, the people that were on the set, the people that were, in, you know, in the movie, any movies that you, all of you may get together or, you know, you've kind of created a bond?
Sure. No, that's a great question. Well, certainly on The Breakfast Club, because we had a unique opportunity there, because John was so cool and he was very important. I should say rehearsal was very important to him.
Yeah.
So on that film, all those years ago, when we first got to Chicago to make the film, Mr. Hughes had carved out a few weeks for us just to rehearse. And in that time, it was so smart what he did, because people are getting to know each other. We're talking about the project. We're talking about each other's work. We're blocking scenes. We're doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, that's a luxury you're not always afforded as an actor.
Right.
So yeah. That one comes to mind based on that question. It was a great question. And on that film, of course, I mean, lifelong friends.
That's well, awesome. Will there be will there be any reunions for The Breakfast Club? For, I mean, a wonderful actors, obviously, either informally or formally?
Well, sadly, we all reunited to honor him at the Oscars. I mean, the Oscars were so kind to invite us because they were honoring John, I believe it was in 2008 or 2009. So, and as we know, I mean, I think, you know, it's the highest level you can get to in the film business. But over the years, comedies aren't necessarily always acknowledged. So the fact that they honored John's work and that we all were there that night was amazing. You know, Molly Ringwald and Matthew Broderick and Macaulay Culkin and so many of us were there. So that was really an incredible experience.
You weren't jealous of Macaulay Culkin because VH1 put him number one on the list of the 100 greatest teen stars, and you were only number four? You were
three. I'm an old guy, and he's young and cute still.
No, he isn't. You're three behind.
They're all cute. And Molly Ringwald's on my show. I watch Riverdale.
Okay.
So I'm like,
cool.
Yeah, there she is. It was so awesome to see her on.
Honestly, when that came up, I mean, I just needed a few days to just, you know, digest it all. So I was so really excited and kind of nervous when I got to the Oscars. You know, you can't believe it. You're just seeing all these great people that you admire and people you want to work with. And it's such a privilege just to be on that stage. And it's really surreal when you walk out there and you just see the whole industry staring at you. And it's just an incredible thing. So to honor John that night was just awesome.
We only have another minute or so. I just want to mention quickly the Anthony Michael Hall Literacy Club. Tell us quickly how you're helping youth at risk.
Thank you. Well, years ago, there was a lady who was an educator there at Chapman University. It's a great college in Southern California.
Right.
She was kind enough, along with the faculty, to contact me and ask me to help. And it was a program for at-risk high school students. Unfortunately, it's no longer in existence, but we were able to see it through for a period of years. And, you know, it promoted literacy and writing. And, you know, we saw the great results. There were a lot of first-generation Americans from everywhere, from Mexico to, you know, all over the world. Not only did I see them learn and grow as high school students, you know, the program matured and they went on to go to great colleges and great jobs. And it was just such a
how rewarding is that? That is amazing that you can help the youth. The movie is called War Machine. It's on Netflix. Now tell everyone how they can see it.
Well, it started streaming on May 26th, and, you know, much smarter minds than I at Netflix and Plan B did a great job in planning it for this Memorial Day weekend. And the truth is, it started streaming yesterday in over 90 countries. So, just an amazing thing. And again, with this new model that Netflix has, you know, they're just incredible. They're groundbreaking. And I think it's just incredible. It's just an honor to be working for them.
Anthony Michael Hall, Gervie's Law wants to thank you on behalf of Carrie and Alan for being with us today. And good luck with the movie and Singularity and all your future endeavors.
Alan, thank you. I thank you both, and it was a real privilege. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, stay tuned. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. ABC.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
How would you like to win a free mattress? Well, during Mattress Firm's Memorial Day giveaway, 50 lucky winners will win a free mattress of up to $3,000 in retail value. Visit a participating Mattress Firm between May 19th and May 29th to enter for your chance to win your perfect mattress. So hurry in and don't miss Mattress Firm's Memorial Day giveaway. No purchase necessary, ends 5/29/17. Open to legal residents of the 50 U.S. and D.C., 18 or older. For complete details, see the official rules at a participating store or at mattressfirm.com/giveaway. Sponsored by Mattress Firm, Inc.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Hey there, what's the frequency?
790.
And the letters?
KAC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
And yes, we are back. I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with Carrie Kasem on this beautiful Memorial Day weekend. And I hope you are having a great weekend and enjoying the weather wherever you may be. We had quite a segment just now, Carrie.
You know, it's so crazy because I grew up with that guy. It's so, and even when he
that
did,
guy.
Yeah.
A little more respect. He's got three names.
Anthony Michael Hall. So it's very cool.
You know what's interesting? We were talking about remembering, in that case, his movie that's coming out with Brad Pitt about Afghanistan. And we want to go back in time because Memorial Day is really a day that we should be thinking of the past. We should be remembering what occurred years ago and how it has shaped our lives today. And we have no better person to welcome to our show than David Grand. David Grand, if you don't know, is an award-winning, best-selling author. He works for The New Yorker and has done so since 2003. He's had some amazing success with books that he's written, including The Lost City at Z, A Tale of Deadly Obsession in the Amazon. And he's been involved with other anthologies, such as What We Saw, The Events of September 11th, 2001. He has written for The New York Times, The Atlantic, Washington Post, Boston Globe. The list is endless, and now he's come out with a very, very intriguing, mostly disturbing book called Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI. This is a fascinating read. The New York Times said that it's a disturbing and riveting new book that he has written that is really worth the read. And it talks about what happened many years ago with the Osage Indian tribe, Native Americans. I guess I shouldn't be calling them Indians, although the Cleveland Indians still exist.
Yes,
the Atlanta
true.
Braves
I think
still
they, I think they get protested every year, too.
Well, we don't know about that. We'll find out what David thinks about that. But let's talk about the birth of the FBI. It's fascinating. David Grand, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's great to have you, and we want to talk about your book, and it's just released, and it really is an amazing story, how J. Edgar Hoover comes into the FBI and changes
the FBI as we know it. But let's talk about the background first. Tell us about the plight of the Osage Native Americans and what happened.
Sure. So the Osage Indians had once controlled much of the central part of the country, all the way from Kansas to the edge of the Rockies. In the early 1800s, Thomas Jefferson referred to them as the Great Nation. But then, like so many Native Americans, they were driven off their ancestral lands. Within a few decades, they were forced to cede more than 100 million acres of their land. And they were bunched up in a reservation in Kansas and once more were under siege and had to search for a new homeland in the 1870s. And it was then that an Osage chief stood up and he said, we should move to this land in what was then Indian Territory.
What a great decision, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. And it was later became Oklahoma. And he said, because basically the land was rocky and it was infertile and it was hilly. And the white man would finally leave us alone.
Right.
And so they purchased this land and they settled there. And then, lo and behold, this seemingly forsaken land turned out to be sitting upon some of the largest deposits of oil in the United States.
So this is like the Beverly Hillbilly story where they were shooting and Jed found all this oil came up and all of a sudden they became rich.
I think this story's real, Alan.
they did become rich. They became not just rich, they became the wealthiest people per capita in the world. Mm-hmm. There's only about 2,000 or so on the tribal roll. And just to give the listeners a sense, in 1923, those 2,000 or so Osage collectively received what would be worth today more than $400 million.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And I'm sure they arrived at the land with nothing, and it was completely turned around. And then all of a sudden, they started living the life, didn't they?
Yeah, they lived in terracotta mansions. They had servants, many of whom were white. This belied longstanding stereotypes of Native Americans. It was said at the time, whereas one American might own a car, each Osage owned 11 of them.
Wow. That's crazy.
I know, but then they started getting picked off. I mean, then this is, and we, do they don't really know, or these guys were never put away, correct?
Well, they began to be mysteriously murdered, picked off one by one. I write about a kind of remarkable Osage woman named Molly Burkhart and how her family becomes a prime target of the conspiracy. In 1921, her sister disappears, her older sister. She's found a week later in a ravine, a shot in the back of the head. Within a few days, her mother grows mysteriously sick. And within 2 months, she dies, and evidence would later suggest that she had been poisoned. And not long after that, she had a younger sister who lived nearby. And one night, about 3 in the morning, Molly heard a loud explosion. She got up. She went to the window. She looked out towards her sister's house. All she could see was this orange ball rising into the sky. Somebody had planted a bomb under the house, killing her younger sister, her sister's husband, and an 18-year-old maid who lived in the house with them.
Wow.
And that was just her family. I mean, other people were being systematically targeted. There were poisonings, there were shootings, and, of course, there was even this very brutal bombing.
And they had married white men, Molly Burkhart and her sisters. Did that have anything, from your perspective, to do with it? Was there some kind of conspiracy, or was this something just that they were, like you say, I'm using Carrie's word, picking them off to try and get that money?
No, these were very elaborate conspiracies, and what happened is those when the Osage had their land, they created a mineral trust, which basically, not to get too complicated, but they controlled all the subsurface mineral rights of the land, and each Osage person had what was called a head right, and that was essentially a share in that mineral trust. And so every 4 months they would receive a check that would be worth thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And that head right could not be bought or sold, so it could not be easily swindled. It wasn't like surface territory land. It couldn't just be taken. The only way it could be gotten was through inheritance. And so that is what caused these incredibly sinister plots that were, in effect, inheritance schemes, where people would marry into families, into Osage families, pretending to love them. Meanwhile, they were systematically planning to murder them.
David, how do you get involved in something like this? You know, it's an intriguing story, and we're going to tell more of the story because the folks who are listening want to know what happened and how the FBI got involved. But as a award-winning writer, how do you become student of the Osage, and why hasn't the public been made more aware of it? You know, we talk about Memorial Day weekend. We don't seem to remember what happened to the Osage tribe.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I heard about this story. Obviously, I'm a writer, so I'm always looking for stories that haven't been told. And I heard about this in 2011. I made a trip out to the Osage Nation in Oklahoma. And when I was there, I visited the Osage Nation Museum, and they had this great panoramic photograph on the wall. It was taken in 1924. It showed members of the tribe along with white settlers. And it looked very innocent if you're just looking at it. But I noticed that a portion of the photograph was missing. And I asked the museum director what had happened to it. And she said it contained a figure so frightening that she decided to remove it. And she then pointed to the missing panel, and she said the devil was standing right there. And it turned out that that figure was one of the killers. And for me, just to get to your question about kind of what set me on my way, that's really what set me on my way, because I was struck by the fact that the Osage had removed that picture not to forget, but because they can't forget. And yet here so many people, including myself, had either completely forgotten or had no knowledge of what was really one of the most sinister crimes in American history.
You know, we have to take a quick break, but what I want to do when we come back is I want to talk about the FBI and the involvement in the FBI, because that's, you know, the real underpinnings of the FBI as we know it versus the way it was in 1908 when Theodore Roosevelt created it. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Kicking off the unofficial start of summer.
Oh, yes!
This Memorial Day weekend, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Attention investors, protect your IRA or 401k by storing your retirement at home with an Augusta Home Delivery Gold IRA. Call Augusta today at 855-858-5807 for a free guide on transferring a portion of your IRA or 401k into approved physical gold and silver coins and store them in your safe at home or at your local bank. Call 855-858-5807 today and discover how you can get up to $2,000 in silver free. Call Augusta today at 855-858-5807.
It's Macy's Memorial Day mattress sale with specials now through Monday from Sealy, Serta, Beautyrest, Tempur-Pedic, Stearns & Foster, and more. And Queen mattress sets starting at $299. Get free mattress delivery with a minimum purchase of $787. Shop our stores, go to Macy's.com, or call 1-800-MACY-BED. Macy's Memorial Day mattress sale. Savings off regular and sale prices. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
I hear you're giving away tickets to music shows and comedies and...
Oh, yeah, it's a little added bonus for listening to KABC.
Up to 10 of each, please.
Well, you do have to win them first.
Hey, buddy, mind if I borrow your phone?
Listen, call, win! The KABC will call your ticket to SoCal's hottest tickets. Courtesy of 790 KABC. Your source for breaking news. Live and local, KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm Alan Gervie, and I am here with Carrie Kasem. We are talking to David Gran, who is an award-winning author. He's a staff writer with The New Yorker, and he is prolific in these interesting and really compelling stories. We're talking about his book, which recently came out, and the book is called The Killers of Flower Moon, The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI. Before the break, David, we talked about the initial FBI and the creation of it. Tell us how the FBI got involved and why it was so important for these Osage murders that were seemingly unresolved.
Yes. So one of the most striking things in doing this research, which I had never really had fully understood until I did this book, was just how lawless this country was back in the 1920s, and particularly in this area, this kind of remnant of the wild frontier. Lawmen often had very little training, very little knowledge about scientific detection. What's more, corruption was often permissive. And so these crimes went on for years, and nobody caught any of the killers partly because of prejudice. The victims, the cases were ignored because the victims were Native Americans, and also because of corruption. The powerful were able to basically tilt the scales of justice. In 1923, the Osage Tribal Council, after officially more than two dozen murders, and the real number was much higher, issued a resolution pleading for federal authorities to step in. And it was then that the case wound up with a rather obscure branch of the Justice Department. It was then known as the Bureau of Investigation and would later be renamed, and we know it, of course, today as the FBI, or the
right.
Federal Bureau of Investigation. And it became one of their first major homicide cases. The Bureau back then was a pretty ragtag operation, had only a few smattering offices across the country. Agents did not yet have authority to make arrests, and they had very limited jurisdiction over crimes. But they did have jurisdiction over American Indian reservations, and so that's why this case fell to them. And it became one of J. Edgar Hoover's first major cases, and really was part of and traced the remaking of the Bureau into a more professional operation.
Including making sure that they were wearing dark suits and ties and abstaining from alcohol.
Yes, very much so. So initially when the Bureau got this case in 1923, just to give you a little bit of sense, they badly bungled the case. For 2 years, they failed to make any arrests. And Hoover was, in fact, hoping to dump the case back onto state officials because he was embarrassed that he couldn't solve it. But it was then that some agents had gotten an outlaw out of jail, a guy named Blackie, and they hoped to use him as an informant. And instead, he slipped away, he robbed the bank, and he killed the police officer. And so Hoover was worried about a scandal, and it's hard to believe that our most kind of autocratic bureaucrat in history was insecure about his power. But he was then. He feared that this case might end his dreams of building a bureaucratic empire.
And wasn't he only 29 years old at the time living with his mother?
Yes, he was 29 years old. He had none of his big jowls then. And he was named director in 1924. And after he bungled the case, he summoned a man, a frontier lawman named Tom White, to Washington, D.C. Tom White, in many ways, is a remarkable man and reflects the transformation of law enforcement and the transformation of the country. He was born in a log cabin on the frontier in Texas. I came from a family of lawmen. His father was a sheriff. Oops, sorry.
That's okay. Sheriff is calling. You say sheriff,
yeah,
and you get a call.
About that.
Yeah.
Turn that off. Okay. His father had been a sheriff.
Yeah.
And he was a lawman early on at a time when justice was often meted out by the barrel of a gun. And then by the time Hoover summons him to Washington, he has to wear a suit. He's learning to fingerprints and other methods of scientific detection. He has to file paperwork, which Hoover now mandates, which he can't stand. And of course, he shows up to Washington. Now, he didn't really know why he had been summoned at that point. And one of the things was Hoover hated tall agents back then. Oh, he always hated tall agents. He was short in stature. He was very insecure about his stature. He actually kept a little dais behind his desk to stand on. And so taller agents were petrified to be summoned to Washington because they were afraid if he saw they were tall, he would fire them.
That's hilarious.
And so Tom White shows up, and he's standing 6'4".
Texas man standing 6'4".
And he's looming over Hoover. What's more, he's defiantly wearing a cowboy hat. And it's then that Hoover begins to tell him about the Osage murders, and White realizes that he's not really being purged from the Bureau. In fact, Hoover needs him because he's one of the few actually experienced criminal investigators to basically save Hoover's skin and try to solve the case. And so White puts together an undercover team to infiltrate the region. And most interestingly, one of the undercover operatives was an American Indian. He was probably the only American Indian in the Bureau. And they go in undercover. They pose as cattlemen. One poses as an insurance salesman. And actually, according to the records, sold real policies, though I have no idea what happened to them.
I'd love to see those policies.
And they begin to try to figure out who is behind these murders.
Wow. And, you know, did they ever, so I don't want to give away the whole book and I don't want to give away everything, but is there any justice that we, that, that these people got?
So ultimately they follow the money, and the money to see who is profiting from these murders. And it leads them to a very prominent white settler. And what's more, it leads them to somebody who Molly knew well and trusted, and who many of the Osage knew. And what makes these crimes so sinister is that they were deeply intimate crimes where they involved an extraordinary level of betrayal of people pretending to love you while often plotting to kill you. But one of the things I also try to show is that while the Bureau was able to capture some of the killers, there was a much deeper and darker conspiracy that it never exposed, and that there were, in fact, scores, perhaps even hundreds of murders that went unsolved.
Wow, that, and that's really tragic. And, you know, you talk about a forgotten chapter in American history or an unknown chapter. It's a book like this that makes people realize, and again, we're talking about Memorial Day here, to remember what happened many years ago and how difficult it was back then to solve murders, as it is sometimes now. But they didn't have the technology yet. With the Osage murders, there definitely was there was motivation to try and bring justice to these people.
So certainly in the case of Tom White, who had a certain quiet goodness, and this story has a lot of evil, but it also has a lot of goodness. People like Tom White, also Molly Burkhart, this Osage woman who really valiantly crusades for justice despite the danger to her own life.
Are we going to see a movie made of your book?
You know, there has been talk about making it into a movie with possibly with Scorsese directing, and if they did that, it would be wonderful. Because
wait a second, David, what do you mean talk about? This is you. You have to tell us. We're right here in Hollywood, and we have a lot of people. We've had a lot of entertainment attorneys. We've had producers on the show. We have a lot of people. Anthony Michael Hall was just on the show. He's directed, produced. We have a lot of connections here. So
make it happen. Make it happen.
There we go.
We can make this happen, but don't say they're talking about it. We're talking about you, you and us. We are talking about making this a movie because it's fascinating. Don't you think, Carrie?
I love it. I have to say, I saw The Lost City of Z, and I have to ask you, because there was this one part, and I don't know if that it was embellished or not, but, you know, the man and his child go off into the Amazon again. He's older now, you know, his kid's grown up, and the wife is left behind in England. And he says, if you get this, like, watch back, you know I've made it. So she gets the thing back, but we never hear from him again. Was that what happened?
So there is an essential truth to that, which is that I don't think he ever explicitly said, if this comes back, you'll know what happened to me. But he did, but his compass was recovered.
It was
found,
okay,
and brought back to Europe, and his wife did believe it was proof that he was still alive.
Wow. Or alive, or made it to the Lost City of Z,
or
and then
the Lost
died.
City of Z. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. The Lost City of Z, and the new book. It's called Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders, and the Birth of the FBI. Now, people can get it anywhere, Amazon, or anywhere any books are sold. Correct.
That is correct, yes.
Anywhere. It's a great read. In fact, the New York Times concluded by saying, if this all sounds like the plot of a detective novel, you have fallen under the spell of David Grand's brilliance. And I know a lot of people who are interested in these mysteries, and this is a true story. This is something we need to remember, and we need to make sure it doesn't happen again. We have different types of greed that takes place now, whether it's in our government or otherwise.
With the elderly, what I do.
With,
I see it all the
Carrie
time.
With Carrie does, with yeah. the elderly, and it's really sad. And David Grand has... he has captured an era in history, which is really something that we can learn from. I want to thank you so much for being on Gervie's Law, David Grand.
Thank you for having me on the program. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And for everyone else out there, we hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend. We want to thank you for listening to Gervie's Law. And we have Scott Turow next week.
Yay! I know you've been excited about that one.
Yeah, so we're going to talk to Scott next week. Have a great week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.